Sanskrit, we spoke at chapter 6, verse number 24. And we have to recall that Krishna is going through the process of meditation, and in these verses, he is describing the actual process of sitting for meditation, what happens at that point of meditation, and also he will discuss then what is the result of such a meditation. In the last verse 24, Krishna explained that one has to first of all, in the state of meditation, Indriya Gramam Viniyamya. Indriya Gramam. Gramam means group. Group of Indriyas, meaning all your senses, eyes, ears, nose, etc. Viniyamya means to restrain or withdraw. So, in the state of meditation, one has to first master and discipline the senses, because it is through the senses again that disturbances to the mind can occur. So at the point of meditation, one has to totally restrain the senses from wandering around. And he gave us some tips earlier how to do that also. And also he says, manasa, using the help of your mind, restrain the senses and keep the mind focused. And therefore, it has got to be an intelligent withdrawal. One does not just restrain the senses by force, but by understanding the very purpose of meditation. So once we know what is the goal of meditation, we are able to discipline the senses with the mind. And Krishna used the word samantata in verse 24, which means completely from all sides. The senses have got to be disciplined from all directions, sound, taste, touch, sight, smell, with the help of the mind. Therefore, when the mind has, the senses have got to be withdrawn, the mind has got to be under your control from thoughts of running to the world. Now, the question is, sometimes it might appear to us that it is very difficult, isn't it? First of all, restrain the senses from running outwards, then restrain the mind also from running outwards. So how are we supposed to do this, to restrain both the external and internal disturbances? So now in the next verse, Krishna explains further what one should do. And Krishna cautions that this withdrawal from the external and internal world must be done gradually. Do not expect to see overnight results. So this withdrawal has got to be practiced and slowly cultivated. Why? Because the mind, since childhood, since adulthood, has been conditioned to what? Always run outwards to the world. The senses have always been conditioned to also run towards the world for seeking happiness, pleasure. And if you are trying to do it in meditation, don't expect overnight to be able to discipline your senses and mind. So what do you do? First of all, turn away from the gross objects of the world. First of all, deal with the gross objects, all your possessions, your relatives, your friends, etc. How do we withdraw from the gross objects from the world? By making from our mind, must understand that all these external things are for my inner growth. They do not belong to me. They have been given to me for a purpose to grow spiritually. So I should not get attached to them. Therefore, the mind has got to understand this very clearly. If you don't understand, then you will not be able to discipline your senses also. And then as you are able to move your mind away from the gross world, then you have to handle the subtle world, which is your mind. And how do you do that? By understanding even the thoughts are not yours. Who are you? The thoughts are not yours. Therefore, who are you? You are the witness to the thoughts. You are not the thoughts. You are the one who is witnessing the thoughts. So the thoughts also don't belong to you. First, the gross doesn't belong to you. Then also the subtle also doesn't belong to you. I am the witness. I am the consciousness. So here what Krishna says, he uses the word uparami. Uparami means one should withdraw that discipline of the senses. That discipline of the mind must be there. One should withdraw. How? Sane, sane, slowly, step by step, withdraw gradually. Do not expect a drastic change. Do not expect to control your mind and your senses immediately or overnight. So, what is the most important key as you are trying to discipline this mind, these senses, as you are sitting in meditation and trying to discipline? What is the very important key here? Krishna says, dhriti. If you look at the second line, you see the word dhriti. Dhriti means you must have perseverance. That is a very, very important key to meditation. So whatever you do, that discipline of the mind, you must have perseverance, you must have commitment, you must have dedication. Therefore, that act of sitting in meditation has got to be daily. You cannot expect to discipline the mind and senses if you treat meditation as a weekend exercise or as a part-time hobby. So that perseverance to ensure that you sit every day, it doesn't matter. What is telling you is your mind will run. It doesn't matter. But you, if you do it diligently with perseverance, you will be able to bring that mind and the senses under your control. So dhriti is very important, perseverance, using your willpower to sit in meditation. Dedicate that 5 or 10 minutes, whatever you can do. And he says, how do you also develop this perseverance? With the buddhi, with the intellect. The intellect has got to control the mind will then control the senses. When the intellect is weak, it is unable to control the mind is unable to control the senses. So ultimately it goes back to the buddhi or the intellect. And the intellect has got to be kept steady, grihita. So buddhi, grihita means steady intellect. When we say steady intellect means, you must understand, the only thing that can make your intellect steady is what? What is the only thing that can make your intellect focus and steady? Huh? No. What?
Huh?
What? Prayers, no. Only knowledge can make your intellect steady and firm. And knowledge of what? Knowledge of Atman. Therefore, the intellect must be constantly what we call engrossed in the knowledge of Atman. That daily study also will ensure that our intellect is very focused. Because what type of meditation is Krishna talking about here? Vedantic meditation. Vedantic meditation means it has to be practiced with the help of your intellect. And this intellect must be endowed with the spiritual knowledge. So when you sit in meditation, this intellect is totally focused on Aham Atma Asmi. I am the witness, I am the consciousness. With that determination, with that perseverance, one should withdraw and discipline the senses and the mind. How? He says in that third line, Atma Samstam Manaha Kritva. Fix the mind. Kritva means making the mind fix on what? Atma Samstam. Fix your mind on Atma. Now the question is, where is your mind? Where is your mind? Within you, your mind is there, right? Your mind is there. Physically, your mind is there, right? Where is Atman? Atman also is all over. So when you say fix the mind on Atma, do you have to take your mind somewhere to go and fix it? After all, Atman is all everywhere around. And the mind is within you, right? Manas is within you. Atman is all pervading. So what does it mean here? fixing his mind on the self, fixing the mind on Atma. What is he trying to tell you here?
Be conscious always.
Be
conscious
of?
Of Atma.
Be conscious of Atma means constantly bring your mind to thoughts of Atma. That is what it means by fixing your mind on Atma. Be very conscious on what you are meditating on. This is not thoughtlessness meditation. It is meditation on Atma. So fixing your mind on Atma means slowly, steadily, by discipline, by commitment, keep on thinking about Atma. So that's why we have to study the scriptures first in order to do Vedantic meditation. So what are the thoughts which are the mind is fixed on? Aham Brahma Asmi, Aham Atma Asmi, Aham Nitya, Aham Sakshi. The mind is constantly fixing its thoughts on Atma. Non-stop. And therefore he says that has to be done na kimchit api chintaye, with the exclusion of all other thoughts. One has to constantly bring the mind to Atman and exclude all other thoughts. So you have to be very disciplined, very focused. Don't entertain thoughts other than Atma. So the flow of Atma thoughts to the exclusion of, that is called Anatma. Anything which is opposite of Atma in the scriptures is called Anatma. A-N-A-T-M-A. Anatma. So, for that time, at least for that 10 minutes or 15 minutes that you're sitting in meditation, keep all the worldly thoughts away and your mind is dwelling in Atma. And all this is going to take time. Because for us to withdraw, that's why he says slowly, be patient, don't expect overnight results, but be very determined, be very committed also. Right? Now, the question is, again he will explain very properly in the next verse, verse 26, that as you're slowly trying to discipline this Atma, what happens? You're slowly trying to discipline this mind, bring it back to Atma, what happens? So here he says, see, actually this process of bringing the mind to Atma means what? In fact, you are doing this now also. What are you doing now for 1 hour? Hopefully you are. For that 1 hour, you are concentrating on spiritual knowledge, right? So what are you doing actually? You are bringing your thoughts away from the world, and for that 1 hour you are trying to concentrate on that spiritual knowledge. That itself is a form of meditation. There is nothing much different from what you are doing now and that when you are sitting in meditation. The concept is the same. In meditation also you are taking your mind away from thoughts of the world and trying to concentrate on Atma. That is exactly what you are doing here, which is a form of meditation. As long as you keep your worldly thoughts away, and for that 1 hour you are concentrating on the knowledge, is also a form of meditation. So that is exactly what is also happening in meditation, when your mind is dwelling on Atma with the exclusion of all worldly thoughts. So you're actually doing it is not difficult. We think it's difficult. But actually for those of you who are able to concentrate your mind for 1 hour, you are already moving in that direction also. So in the very next verse here now, Krishna explains something also about the mind. In verse 26 he says, Chanchalam Manaha. The mind is by its own nature, except this. Because many people cannot understand this. They say, when I'm meditating, my mind runs. What does it mean? When I'm trying to sit in meditation, people say, my mind runs. When I'm chanting my mantras, my mind runs. What does it mean? Krishna is telling, that is the very nature of your mind. It will run. Because why? You have not led a disciplined life. So don't expect your mind not to run, isn't it? So he says, Manaha, the mind, is chanchala, it is restless. Understand that first. Understand this is the very nature of the mind. It is chanchalam, it is restless. And thus, because of its restless nature, it is nischarati, it wanders away. By its own tendency, the fickle, restless, extroverted mind will have the tendency to wander. Now, what should we do? Knowing that the mind is restless, has a tendency to wander, Krishna says, yataha, yataha, whatsoever, whatever the reason, maybe you hear a particular sound while you're meditating, suddenly some sound is there, and suddenly that sound pulls your mind away somewhere, or maybe you're sitting somewhere, some nice fragrance comes in, because of that fragrance also it pulls your mind away somewhere. So anything can pull your mind away, and it is the nature of the mind to follow that. So he says, yataha yataha, whatever it is that causes your mind to move away, tathas tatho, from that place where your mind is gone, niyamya, pull it back. Meaning what? Meaning we should understand to be the observer first of our mind. So we should very carefully in the first stage of meditation, when we are not yet experts at meditation, we should always be the observer of our thoughts. Let the thoughts wander, but you do not wander away with the thoughts. So you observe where your thoughts are going and slowly pull it back again. And what will happen after a few minutes? Again the mind will wander. What do you do again? Pull it back again. So what are you doing in effect? This is a beautiful exercise which is telling you. The mind wanders, you pull it back. Your mind wanders, you pull it back. So what you are doing? You are now exercising your will slowly, steadily by steadily. You are having a tug of war with your mind. Right? So the important thing at the early part of meditation is not to worry that your mind is wandering. It will wander because for 50 years we have been letting it wander. So what is going to happen now? Become the observer. Let it wander, but be very alert where your mind is going. Follow the thoughts, where it's going, pull it back again. Follow the thoughts, where it's going, pull it back again. So this exercise will help you eventually to rein in your mind. So that, because you see, we must understand that our mind will always run to what it is attached to, isn't it? And what is another word for attachment? What is another word for attachment? Addiction. Because you are so addicted to that, whatever it is, that object or that person or whatever it is you are addicted to, that forms that attachment. And definitely, see, if you are a football fan, if you are crazy about football, morning to night you think about nothing but football, definitely when you sit for meditation, where is your mind going to run? Obviously, football isn't. So whatever you are obsessed with, whatever you are attached with, be your family member, be an object in your possession, that is where the mind will run. And it is a tendency for the mind to run. But what you have to do, be an observer, pull back the mind. Again 2 minutes later, it will run, pull back the mind. That constant exercise is what he is teaching us to do there, which will cause the distraction. Pull back the mind, observe the mind where it is going, gently pull it back, and Atmani eva vasam nayet. Atmani here means that Atma, the self, eva alone, vasam means to subjugate, nayet should bring that thought under the subjugation of the mind. You should keep on pulling that thought back and let it be fixed again on Atman. Again keep on recalling aham Atma asmi, aham Brahma asmi, aham Nitya. How do you pull the mind back? By recalling the words of the scriptures. Run, observe it, use the mantra, pull the mind back again. So it is a constant exercise. And what is going to be the result if you keep on doing it on a daily basis, if you are committed and dedicated to this practice of meditation by observing and pulling your mind, what will be the result now? Krishna talks about the dhyana phalam or the fruit of meditation. in verse number 27. He says, the result of such a meditation, if you are able to practice it diligently with commitment, the result is prasanta manasa. The manas, the mind becomes prasanta. Prasanta means tranquil. You will experience that tranquility of the mind. Whether it is for 5 minutes or 7 minutes or 10 minutes, you will experience that. And this tranquility of the mind, Krishna says, it is upaiti, means it comes, and it is uttamam sukham, it is a supreme peace. It is not the ordinary peace that you experience with your senses and your mind. Because why is this peace known as uttamam sukham? It is a supreme peace. Not to say it's lasting, but it is beyond the experiences of your senses. It is not being experienced by your senses because you have discipline and train your senses. It is not being experienced because your mind is happy, because you have also disciplined your mind. And where is your mind fixed in? Atman. So the happiness is coming from where? From within. It is not external, it is within. So if you are able to diligently discipline your mind and senses, that happiness that you experience is the highest state of bliss, because it is being experienced from internal and it is not external. That's why he calls it sukham uttamam. It is the highest state of bliss. You will be able to experience it. The peace is not dependent on external factors. All other peace that we, bliss or peace that we enjoy, is because of something, isn't it? Because of money, I am blissful. Because of this person in my life, I am blissful. But what does Vedanta say of such kind of peace? It is conditional. Conditional means what? It is because of something that you are happy. Because of money, I am happy. Because of this promotion, I am happy. Because of this food I ate, I am happy. So it is all conditional bliss. Whereas this bliss that you experience is called unconditional bliss. And what is the problem with conditional bliss? It can go anytime, isn't it? Because it is dependent on something. So it can, conditional bliss is that bliss which can go at any time. And therefore, benefit of this meditation is when you experience that bliss within, it is everlasting bliss. It is unconditional bliss. When we say, I am peaceful unconditionally, means what? When you say, I am peaceful unconditionally, means what? I am peaceful all the time. Isn't it? Because it is not dependent on anything. I am blissful because I've experienced this internal peace, therefore I am permanently peaceful. Yes.
Did you give another word for tranquility?
Another word for tranquility. Bliss, happiness, peace of mind. Calmness, yes, okay. Calmness also true. Peace of mind, calmness, bliss.
It's euphoria.
That is really, really blissful. Euphoria.
Yeah, I mean that's the maximum.
Correct, correct. The highest bliss, euphoria. So, peacefully, I am permanently peaceful. Peacefully rich. Peacefully poor. Peacefully with big house. Peaceful with small house.
Peaceful
no house. Peaceful with people, peaceful without people. Peaceful with black hair, peaceful with white hair also. So because it is not conditional. If it is conditional, means it is dependent on something. That's why it's called unconditional bliss. It is totally not dependent on whatever the external factors. That's why you find these sages and saints. You can put them in a Mercedes car. Supposing you come, you receive them, they come from somewhere, you put them in a Mercedes car, they are not affected. Whatever car you can receive them. Tomorrow you put them in a proton saga, they also not affected. You give them nice food to eat, it's okay. You give them two chapatis and anna, they are also okay. It is we ourselves who want to lavish all these things upon them. To them, it actually means nothing at all. For them, the state of peace is already there. It does not, it is not dependent on anything external. That's why sometimes we criticize, we say, why is that fellow sitting in an expensive car? But to him, it means nothing at all. It is you who have decided to pamper them. But they, to them, it there's no value at all. However,
they care, but people don't give the money higher.
That's the problem.
People
want to impress him. People want to impress the guru. So you put him in a nice house, you give him lavish food to eat, you put him in a nice car. But to him it doesn't matter. Tomorrow he goes back to his ashram, he's eating his two chapatis and dal, he's also happy. So we must understand this. They have already reached that state of bliss. We should not judge them and think why are they living in luxury. To them it really means nothing at all. So that is called unconditional bliss, which he calls here as what you call uttamam sukham. And this bliss is mine. We have to understand this bliss is your very own essential nature. So we must have this conviction that this is my essential nature and this is the bliss that you will experience also. Therefore, knowledge is to know first what is your essential nature. That is what why we go through the knowledge first. We have to understand what is Atma, what is my essential nature. Meditation is to experience that essential nature. So one who has no knowledge of what is Atman, what is he or she going to meditate on? See, that's why people say we experience in meditation, we experience this, we experience that. All these are mystical things you can experience even when you're sleeping and dreaming also. But in Vedantic meditation, we are experiencing the bliss of Atman because we have understood what is Atman. So the mind is completely focused on what is Atman, to meditate on Atman. So, therefore, this bliss is unconditional. As I said, all the sukha, dukkha events of your life will go on. They do not go away. After you study the scriptures, the sukha, dukkha experience of your lives will go on. But because of the new perspective that you have, they do not affect you as before. Right? So, physical pain is there, it will go on. It will continue. If members of the family are not going to change because you come for Gita classes, it will go on. External environment will remain the same. But because of your internal bliss, that purnatvam, your inner vision to life changes. So that's why it's called eternal bliss. Okay? Now, he further goes on to explain also in verse number 27 that this bliss is santa rajasam. You see the word rajas is there. Why are we experiencing this bliss? Santa rajasam. Because the mind, you have removed the rajasic gunas also from the mind. So the rajasic gunas like kama, krodha, lobha, envy, pride, jealousy, desire have slowly been removed from the mind. The quality of rajas is no more there. So that's why you are able to also experience that bliss. And furthermore, akal masam, the last line there. Akal masam means, kalmasha means dirt, or actually refers to tamasic gunas. So akal masam means one who has also subdued the very tamasic gunas. Tamasic gunas which cause sleep, which cause ignorance, those also have been subdued also. Therefore, neither rajasic gunas are there, neither tamasic gunas also are there. Therefore, such a mind is able to experience this bliss. So, Krishna says, Saha yogi, such a meditator, who has now removed the rajasic gunas, has removed the tamasic gunas, Brahma Bhutam. Brahma Bhutam means one who has become one with Brahma. When the mind is endowed with that state of happiness, one is said to be Brahma Bhutam. One has attained the same happiness or state of being as Brahman. So you have identified with Brahman, you are one with Brahman. And what is definition of Brahman? Satchit Ananda. So that Ananda that you are experiencing is one and the same. The word used for that Satchit Ananda, another word is called Brahman. You are one and the same with Brahman. Such is the state of that highest peace. Now we come to verse number 28. Here Krishna keeps on emphasizing about the fruit or the result of the state of meditation. So he is saying here in verse 28, the meditator experiences atyantam sukham, which is on the last line. Atyantam sukham asnute. Asnute means attains. What type of sukham? Adyantam. Now, adyantam has got two words there. One is ati, the other is antam. So, antam means which has limit, which has an end. Ati means which is beyond limits, which is endless. That type of sukham, here he is trying to differentiate it from the other type of sukhams that we experience. When we sleep, we experience sukham. When we eat something nice, we experience sukham. But he is saying all those experiences have got a time limit. They are bound by time, they are bound by space. But this is atyantam, means ati antam. It is beyond limit. It has got no limit. And he says why it has got no limit? That happiness is coming from Brahma samsparsham. Samsparsham means when you contact anything, when you touch anything, that sensation you experience is called samsparsham. So supposing your lips or your tongue tastes some nice food, that means there's a contact with food, and as a result of that contact you experience a bliss. But this contact, samsparsham, is with what? With Brahma, with that Atman which is within. So contact with Brahman is called samsparsham. Contact with that consciousness within. And thus he says this yogi attains that level of happiness, of bliss, evam atmanam sada yunjan. How? By sada means by constantly yunjan, concentrating on what? On that very Atman. The more and more you bring your mind, your thoughts to that Atman, you will continue to enjoy that bliss also. And again he also stresses that it is vigata kalmasha. Kalmasha again, which was mentioned in the last verse, which means that dirt from the mind has been removed. That kalmasha, vigata means to have victory over this dirt, means the various sins in our mind, the various dirts in our mind, when we are able to cleanse the mind. You see exactly what. That's why the scriptures give a description of the mind is like a lake. And there are two reasons why you are unable to see the bed of the lake. One is if the water of the river is turbulent, right? The second reason is if the water is dirty, is murky, you are unable to see the bed of the river. So how do you see? So the bed of the river represents what? Represents Atman. The water represents the mind. The water represents the mind. When the mind is turbulent because of rajasic gunas, when the mind is dirty because of tamasic gunas, you are unable to experience that Atman. So what is it that causes the experience of Atman? When we are able to stop the turbulence of the mind and we are able to remove the dirt from the mind, you will automatically see the bed of the river. So the process of meditation is to remove that, not to what we call, not to how you say, it's not a special experience that we have. All we have to do is still the mind. How we still the mind? By bringing the mind to thoughts of Atman, and we remove the dirt from the mind through the disciplined living that we live. Once we are able to achieve that, automatically when you sit in meditation, you will experience that bliss within. And thus there are two ways how we sin. When we talk about sin, there are two ways how we can sin. How is that? What are the two ways that we can sin? When we say sin means you add more dirt to your mind. So how are the two ways that you add more dirt to your mind?
One is through ignorance.
Ignorance of what?
Ignorance of yourself.
Of the Atman?
Yes.
Okay. But how do you really add more sin to yourself? There are only two ways.
Senses.
No?
The senses. Greed. The bad actions.
Okay, so when we say bad actions through greed, etc., meaning what? What is the scriptures tell you, don't do this, don't do that, what do you do? You do everything. Isn't it? They say don't lie, don't cheat, don't steal. The more and more you violate that words of the scriptures, means what? You're putting more dirt in your mind. And what is the second way?
By not doing what scriptures ask you to do.
Exactly. Scriptures say do this, do this, do this, and you don't do. They say do your duty to your parents, do your duty to your elders, do your duty to your teachers, but you don't do. They say give charity, you don't do. So one is we do what we are not supposed to do, we add more dirt into our mind. Second is we don't do what we are supposed to do, you also add dirt into your mind. So there are two ways that you can see. If you are able to correct these two, we are able to remove that very dirt from the mind. So therefore Krishna says this is not a difficult process, that's why he uses the word sukhena. It can be reached. This state of endless bliss can be reached. If we follow the instructions of the scriptures carefully, you can reach that state of bliss effortlessly, sukhena. So he's giving us the assurance that if you follow the teachings with commitment, sincerity, cultivate the right lifestyle, dedicate your life to study of scriptures, there is no reason that you cannot experience this infinite bliss also. Okay, now we come to verse number 29. Again, he carries on explaining about the dhyana phalam or the fruit of this meditation. So what happens, he says, in verse number 29, if you look at the third line, ikshate. Ikshate means sees, this meditator sees yoga yukta, because the mind is now purified with this state of meditation. Atma here means the mind. The mind is now purified. All the rajasic and the tamasic gunas have been removed. And the mind is now purified. So what does this meditator see? Now see here means not physically, but it means at the subtle level. So not physically see, you're not going to change your physical vision. It is your inner vision that is going to change. So once the mind is purified, Krishna says, one will see what? Sarvatra samadarshana. Such a person whose mind has been purified sees in every human being, he sees the common Atma everywhere. He is able to experience that bliss in every person, in everything, inert and inert. He is able to realize the beauty of the consciousness which is all pervading. So, sarvatra samadarshana. He is able to worship. Samadarshana means to worship everything in creation as a very manifestation of that one Atman. So, in every human being, he sees that oneness. Just like a goldsmith, he sees the variety of ornaments, but in the variety of ornaments, he sees that presence of gold. Just like the potter who sees varieties of pots, but in every pot he is able to experience that oneness of clay. So similarly, such a person who's got a purified mind is able to experience that oneness in all creation. And sarva bhutashtam atmanam, he sees the Atma residing in every being. Just like space is in every room, he experienced that Atma residing in every being, living being and non-living beings also. And not only that, he says, sarva bhutani chatmani. not only does he see the Atman in all living beings, he sees all the beings in the self. So one is what? One is seeing that same consciousness in everything. One is seeing everything in that one consciousness. So just like we say, we see space everywhere. Space is in this room, space is in that room. Ultimately you say what? You say space is in this room, space is in that room, space is everywhere, space is inside the body, space is outside the body. That space is only of one nature. That is the first level. What is the next level?
Everything is in space.
Everything is in space, isn't it? Everything rests in space. So one is seeing space in everything. Second is we look at the macro level, everything actually rests in space. And that is what we will see in chapter 10 and chapter 11. In chapter 10, Krishna will talk about seeing the one in all. So he will say, see me in the sun, see me in the moon, see me in the water, see me everywhere. See that oneness in everything. And in chapter 11, he will say, see all in me. So everything actually has only come from that one creator. Everything has come from that one God. Ultimately, we realize that everything has come from that oneness. So, Sarva Bhutani Chatmani, he sees everything, all creation in one. And then in verse 30, he carries on explaining further about this Dhyana Phalam, or the fruit of meditation. So, once one is able to experience that oneness in all creation, and is able to experience that creation also coming from one source, in this state of bhakti, we see the Lord as a, you see, when we are in the lower stage of bhakti, when we have not come to this realization, what is our experience of the Lord? We see the Lord as a finite entity with such a form. And our devotion is towards such a Lord with a form. But this is what is called, therefore, apara bhakti. Apara bhakti means it is the starting or the inferior stage of bhakti. And then slowly we come to the higher stage of bhakti after we gain this self-knowledge. So after you gain this knowledge, then only you come to the higher stage of bhakti. And thus Krishna says here, ya mam sarvatra pashyati. Pashyati again means to see. He sees me where? Everywhere. Sarvatra. He sees my presence everywhere. Right? And he says, sarvam cha mayi pashyati. And he sees everyone in the Lord also. So basically what he is saying, carrying forward that idea from the last verse, he not only sees me everywhere, he sees everything also in me, the whole creation abiding in me. And what is the result of this realization? He says, tasya aham na pranashyami. For such a devotee who sees everything in me and sees me everywhere, aham na pranashyami, I will never be separate from such a devotee. There will not ever come a time, whether you are sitting in meditation or whether you are out of the state of meditation, if you are able to experience that oneness of God everywhere, there will never come a time when God is separate from you. God is with you 24/7. So, Krishna says, I am never away from such a devotee. And not only that, sachamena pranashyati. He also does not move away from me. So, he is also fixed on me. I am also fixed on him. We can never be separated. The devotee and God become one. There is a total oneness. So that is what is called total inseparation. In fact, in this, you read the story of Sri Ramakrishna. When he used to go into such kind of ecstatic states of meditation, he will just, if he hears a bhajan or something, he will just lose total consciousness of the whole world. So anything can remind him about God. Why? Because his mind is already engrossed in God. Anything that he sees in creation, any sound he hears, can he can totally get lost in that consciousness. And he was worried that he was going mad actually, because he didn't understand. In the beginning stages, when he was experiencing all this, he thought actually he was losing his mind. Until one day, a lady saint came to visit him in the ashram, a Brahmani, a lady saint. And when he described to her that, why am I going mad, you know, every time I only keep thinking about God, everything keeps reminding me of God. She told him that people are mad for money, people are mad for fame, people are mad for power. The difference with you is you are mad for God. So there's nothing wrong with you. Right? You are just mad, just like how people are obsessed with something, your obsession is just for God. And that in our scriptures is described as Mahabhava, the highest state of ecstasy. And it is said in this state of ecstasy, there are 19 various physical manifestations. Okay. For example, when you reach this state of ecstasy, for no reason you will be just shedding tears. You might have experienced this also sometimes in some state of devotion, when your mind is just totally lost in thoughts of God, you can experience just the tears coming for no reason. That is one sign of what we call Mahabhava. There are 19 different signs like this. And one is just the shedding of tears, and the other is trembling of the limbs. The limbs will tremble for no reason. Another is called horripilation. Horripilation means what? When the hair stands up for no reason. In fact, your hair only stands for two reasons or three reasons. Why?
Cold.
Either you are extremely cold or
extremely
fear.
Or
and
what do you call that word, brother? What do you call that word?
Mahabhava.
No.
Horripilation.
Horripilation
means when the hair is standing at end. Right? So either you are feeling extremely cold, or something frightens you or shocks you. And third is when the thoughts of God are in you. And this state of the hair standing on end has been described by Arjuna twice in the Bhagavad Gita. He experienced this. The first time was in chapter 1, when his hair stood on end. Why was that? He describes that. He says, my hair is standing on end, my skin is burning, the Gandiva bow slips from my hand. He's describing his symptoms to Krishna. Why? Scared of what?
To
kill his beloved people. Right? So out of fear, out of shock, his hair was standing. Then again, the same symptom Arjuna experiences in chapter 11. His hair also stands. When he sees the total vision of Krishna, the Vishwa Rupa Darshana, he says, my hair is also standing on it. So that time, once was actually in fear, but this time it was in static bliss because of that experience of vision, having a vision of the Vishwa Rupa Darshana. So similarly also is this devotee engrossed in such a state of bliss that there are certain manifestations also. There are 19 different manifestations. There are various manifestations which are described in our scriptures which fall under Mahabhava, the highest state of ecstatic devotion, which is what was experienced by people like Ramakrishna Paramahansa.
They get into a trance or this dancing, isn't it?
Yeah, same like Ramakrishna also did. Dance and all that, and they just lose total consciousness in that bliss. And he used to even just faint sometimes, just like that. You know, and so he was worried that he was getting mad, but they told him later when the saints and sages visited him, they told him, no, there's nothing wrong with you.
And this is different from the kind of trance which all those Kavali people get, right?
Yeah, that is different because they are getting it from a different source, but here they are just engrossed in that bliss of God.
So you call that such person Mahabhanu.
Mahabhanu. Panu, is it? Oh, is it? Mahabhanu. Those who have reached that level of bliss, you mean?
Yes.
Mahabhanu.
Someone who has actually attained what do you call fame, and then, you know, who has highest level of what realization.
realization, yes, yes, correct, correct. And of course, there are not many, but there are some in our history which we can see. So what is a Jnani's expression of devotion is the very appreciation. How does a man of knowledge express the devotion is by appreciating God who is all-pervading in nature. So that's why Jnanis can worship anything, anywhere. They don't have to go to a temple to worship God. Why? Because they're very, by that very expression of devotion is how? By experiencing God in everything in creation. So Jnanam, knowledge, expresses as devotion. So that's why Krishna also says here, in verse number 30, Yaha mam bhajati. Sorry, verse number 31. He expresses that in verse number 31. Yaha mam bhajati. How does the devotee express his devotion? So he says, Yaha meaning this meditator, this jnani, mam bhajati, he adores or he worships me, not through rituals, not through doing all kinds of prayers and things like that, but he worships me as the very perception of me all pervading. That is how such a realized soul worships God. He doesn't have to do special pujas or rituals and things like that. How does he worship God? He worships him in everything in creation. Because he is experiencing him in everything in creation. So, mam bhajati, he worships me in the creation. And thus he says, ekatvam ashtita. Ashtita means established in ekatvam, in this one state of unity. The mind is established in this vision of oneness. He worships me everywhere. Sarva Bhutashtitam, me who is dwelling in Sarva Bhutashtitam means me who is dwelling everywhere. In every being, in every animal, in every plant, everywhere the Lord is present. Therefore, Krishna says such a person, Sarvatha, in every way, Vartamano, remaining in every way, he worships me. Now, what does he mean? He worships me in every way. Meaning, it does not matter, therefore, once you have reached this state, whether you are in the ashram and you have given up everything, or whether you are like those other great people, like he mentioned Janaka, etc., who were householders, but all were the same. Whether those great sages like Vyasa, who were in the ashram, or even like people like Janaka who are running a kingdom, both of them are the same because they have reached that same level of experiencing God in everything. So it does not matter what your lifestyle, whether you are a sannyasi, whether you are a family householder, but once you have reached that state of meditation, it is one and the same, where you can experience God in everything in creation. So it does not matter whether you are a sannyasi or a great sage or you are a householder, you can worship Lord also with that same devotion also. So you can be doing your duties, you can be carrying on with your lifestyle, but you can experience that oneness everywhere. So Krishna says, Saha yogi mayi vartate. Such a yogi, such a meditator remains in that state of absorption all the time. Meaning what? Not only the worshipping God at the altar, but the whole world is a temple of God. See, you have converted the whole world as a temple of God. You can worship God in every way, in any form, in any way that you want. So you have converted the whole world as a temple of God. And thus Krishna says, that is how my devotee remains also. And he now concludes in this verse 32. What is the nature of this devotee? He says, when he is able to experience me in everything in creation, what is the very nature, what is the result of such a devotee? And that is why here we see the great sages and saints who can experience God in everything in creation. Their very nature is what? They are an embodiment of what? When they can see God in everything in creation, how does it express in them? Besides that?
Pure.
Pure, yeah. So how does it express? How does the happiness express?
That when you come into consciousness,
so there is compassion, there is non-violence. You do not want to hurt anything in creation, isn't it? That's why that love, that devotion of experiencing God everywhere expresses through compassion, through sympathy, through non-violence, because you identify with everything in creation. That's when the mind expands to beyond your selfishness and it embraces the whole world. So the attitude is, how can I even hurt anything in creation also? The jnani shares in the sorrow of others, so he cannot even cause hurt to others. The jnani shares in the success of others, so he does not feel any envy or jealousy. See, that is the beauty of a jnani. When you feel the sorrow of others, you cannot hurt others. When you can experience the joy that others are experiencing, there will be no envy, there will be no jealousy in your heart. So that's why Krishna says here in verse number 32, Atma pamyena sarvatra pashyati. He sees or he judges sarvatra, everybody, everyone. How? Atma pamyena, as he judges himself. So you remember the saying, don't do to others what you don't want done to you. So what hurts you, you also would not want to do that same thing to others. What pleases you, you would also want to do for others. So you judge the whole creation according to what you feel. What hurts you, what brings you happiness, what brings you sorrow, you are able to project that into the world also. So by holding yourself as an example, that is how you will also treat the world. That is how is your vision of the world also. So therefore he says, samam pashyati. He has equal vision to everything in creation. He doesn't have any partiality, no selfishness. He does not consider himself superior or inferior to the creation. And thus he says, sukham vayadi va dukham. Whether he is in a state of happiness, sukham, or whether he is experiencing any sorrow for himself, yet his vision to all remains the same. Otherwise, normally it is when we are happy, then we want everybody to be happy. When we are miserable, we also wish other people are miserable, isn't it? Right? But here he says, whether he is in a state of happiness or whether he is in a state of misery, he does not want others to experience that. So his vision of the world is totally samam, that means equal. And thus Krishna says, saha yogi parama mata. Mata means I consider such a person, such a yogi who sees me in the whole creation, I consider him as paramam, as superior to all other types of devotees. That's why our Shastra say, either you don't identify with anyone, that means totally detached. Either you don't identify with anyone or
identify with everyone,
isn't it? Either you detach yourself totally and don't identify with anyone, or you identify all as your one family. But what do we do? We have limited identification, isn't it? This is my family, this is my car, this is my food. So we have limited identification. What here the scriptures are saying, either you identify with everything or everyone, or you detach yourself from everything. There is no in between. There is no that halfway. So sannyasa is withdrawal from limited identification. That is our problem. Our problem is not anything but limited identification. And that's why there's one very famous thing in our scriptures, you will find. It's called Vasudeva Kutumbakam. Have you heard of it? Vasudeva Kutumbakam. Very, very commonly said by saints. It is taken from our scriptures, from one of the Upanishads called the Maha Upanishad. Vasudeva Kutumbakam means what? Vasudha means earth. Vasudha means earth. So there's Vasudeva means Vasudha Eva. Eva means indeed the world or the earth. Is Kutumbukam means what? It's a family. The whole world is but one family. That is the attitude of the saints. The world is but one family. So the identification is with everything in totality. So one a person who has such a mind state has reached the highest level of spiritual progress. And thus at this stage, Krishna has completed his discussion about meditation. He has covered the daily practices to be done, the specific practices to be done, what we should do when we sit in meditation, and what is the process of meditation, and what is the fruit or result of meditation. All these five topics he has covered. Right? So if you remember, Bahir Anta Sadhanam means what? The daily disciplines to be practiced in our life, right? The do's and the don'ts. Antaranga sadhana, prior to sitting for meditation, what are the disciplines we should observe, like making sure the place is clean, etc. and all that. Three, the actual process when we sit for meditation, what we should do to our senses, our mind, etc. And finally, fourth is, what does the mind experience during the state of meditation? And finally, fifth was, what was the result of meditation? So all that is explained. Now comes a doubt in Arjuna's mind. And this is the final topic that Krishna is going to talk about meditation, which concerns the obstacles to meditation. And this is because of a doubt that Arjuna now expresses to Krishna. And what is the doubt here that Arjuna expresses? He says, Krishna, I have listened to you so far. Everything you have been talking about meditation, I have listened very carefully. But I have one doubt in my mind. What is that doubt? I am yoga. I am means this yoga. This process of this yoga means this meditation that you have recommended. Prokta, which is spoken tvaya by you. Whatever this process of meditation that you have been speaking about, he says, I have listened carefully, right, what you have thought. And what have you thought? Samyena. Samyena means you have spoken about the, what we call, samadarshana means to see the oneness in creation. That is the ultimate result of this meditation. If I am able to discipline the mind, I am able to reach the state of meditation, I will see the oneness in creation. Samyena. Therefore, what is the problem here, Arjuna is going to say, I do not see the practicality of being able to discipline the mind. Now, what he is trying to say here is that what you have taught me means what? Reception is there. All of us know, we have heard this for the last few weeks, we have been listening, we have heard about the process of meditation. Reception is there, but what's the problem? Before you act on it. Reception is there. You heard about it, you know about it, but what's the problem? You are able to receive these teachings, but problem is what? To retain that knowledge. Reception is there, but retention is not there, isn't it? That is our biggest problem. So that's why all the spiritual beings are divided into three categories. All spiritual aspirants. On the highest level, we have those which are called the Uttama, the very highly developed, what we call spiritual aspirants. They have got both. They have got reception and they have got retention also. So that means what? When I have retention, the teachings are there with me all the time. When I sit in meditation, I am able to easily recall these teachings. There is reception, there is retention. That is called Uttama. Then we have the other end of the scale is called Adama Adhikari, A-D-H-A-M-A, Adama Adhikari, meaning the very lowest, who does not have any reception. If there is no reception, there is obviously no retention. Okay? Nothing to retain because there is no reception. Then there is the middle one which is called Madhama Adhikari. And majority of people fall under this category. Which is what? Reception is there, but retention is not there. So what happens? The ego I overpowers us. Right? So this is the same problem with Arjuna. He is saying, I have received the teachings. Reception is there, but retention is not there. So what he is saying here? Aham stitta, aham stiram stitim. Na pashyami, I do not see, na pashyami, I do not see stiram stitim, how this knowledge can be there all the time with me. I don't see the steady continuance of this knowledge. It is there some of the time, but most of the time it is not there. So, there is no persistence of retention, right? And that's why we can see many people start spiritual practices very enthusiastically, right? You know, I want to do meditation. I will do it every day. First day, okay. Second day, okay. Third day, okay. What happens? What day, everything gone. Whatever spiritual practice we start, majority of the people do not follow up. So, somewhere along the way, they just lose their enthusiasm and drop away. So, why? In fact, why Arjuna also is analyzing the problem. He says, chanchalam, because the mind is restless. The mind cannot stick to one thing. It has a tendency to keep running in all directions. So the mind is chanchalam. Why? Because of the predominance of rajasic gunas. That is the main reason why our mind is restless. It is wandering. So Arjuna, like all of us, does not have problem with tamasic gunas. Tamasic gunas cause what? Ignorance, sleepiness, drowsiness. Our problem is what? Wandering mind, the restless mind. The majority of the people have this problem. Thus Arjuna says, etasya, these teachings that you have given to discipline the mind, I do not consider it practical. Why? Because of the wandering nature of the mind. It can receive, but it can never retain that knowledge. So in the next two verses or so, 34 and in the next verse or so, 34, Arjuna will continue explaining about the nature of the mind, and then from verse 35, Krishna will give him the remedy. How do we overcome this restless nature of the mind? There is a remedy which what Krishna will give in verse 35. So we will come back next week and look at Arjuna's analysis of the mind in verse 34, and then we will see what is Krishna's remedy. We will now end with the prayer.
Vasudeva sutam devam kamsa chandura mardanam devaki paramanandam krishnam vande jagat guru.